Good morning, everyone. It is early in the morning on April 2nd, 2013. It's been a busy month. Lots of family items to deal with and taxes, as well as work. The spring thaw has started very slowly here, and people are now getting quite concerned about major flooding. That's something that is an annual concern here in Manitoba. So a lot of people are worried that they may be losing the house they live in or the livelihood that they make their living at, because their house will be swept away by floodwaters, or the land that they live on will be flooded for the next long period of time. But no one is actually sure exactly how it's going to go this spring. There may be flooding, there may not be flooding. We'll find out. I hope things are going well in your part of the world. I've had a lot of people write in this month, so there's a lot to consider. As always, I want to thank everyone who has supported the website in some way, either sending in words of appreciation or sending in a question, sending in donations. And as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for posting these responses each month. And with that, let's get into these questions. First person has written in with rather a long question, but here goes. He writes, "Hi, Daryl. There's an old philosophical question which goes, if a twig falls from a tree in a forest and there's no one, man or beast, present to hear it, does it make a sound? It seems to me that a large number of non-duality teachers might answer no. They might even go as far as to say, without the presence of consciousness, there would be no forest, no trees, no twig, in fact, no world. That the world is a collection of appearances in consciousness, and that only consciousness is real. They might say or imply that when we go to sleep at night and awake in the morning, that it only seems that there has been a time when our bodies lay unconscious on a bed, and that in fact there was no break or disruption between the moment we started to feel drowsy and noticing the morning light, as we so-called woke up. They might even say that you were standing here, they might even say that if you were standing here in front of me and I couldn't see the back of your head, it would be because that particular non-seeing was true, and the back of your head would only be so when you turned around. Of course, it would be the case too with your and my brain, which neither of us could see, and the back of my head, and the back of my head, of course. What is your take on this? I ask because your perspective seems to be very different to other speakers of non-duality. However, I notice that you often talk about nature, and of course, in conventional terms, I know what you mean. But it suggests you agree with its conventional meaning, that the world exists outside of awareness of it, that it extends in space and time, which of course accords with the basic scientific view, even though they might say that it exists, but without color, sound, taste, etc., and that the world of appearances are less real. Your own view seems to be that there are no actual things because everything is a process, and thus has and is no form. I write as someone who sees that there is only life happening as nowness, with no real past or future apart from thoughts about them. However, if only consciousness is real, even if it itself cannot be experienced directly without the changing appearances it takes, this has implications for how we view and feel about death. If consciousness is just an invented word and a non-issue and life is a magical baffling event, then maybe death is also an invented word and also a non-issue. Although as a person whose partner died a few years ago, it didn't feel like that. Recently I met socially a non-dual teacher who knows me and that had heard I had recently learned that I have a life-threatening illness. She meant to comfort me and said, "In consciousness there is no illness. Here's the thing. If nature is real and extends in time and space, then my illness, as part of the changing movement and evolution of nature, will go its own way, maybe joined with the movement of what doctors may do in relation to that part of the evolving event of the illness. The name of the illness may be the only static part of the event. At some point in the developing process, the personality may disappear, and the body aspect will carry on with other processes taking place. If, however, there is only consciousness, then there is also no real birth or death. And in some sense, even though at the time I didn't appreciate her comment, she is right. I'm aware of the Zen tale about the man chased through the jungle by a tiger who, to escape, when he gets to the cliff, climbs down, clinging to a vine, and noticing the tiger above chewing on the vine, and also noticing a wild strawberry within reach, picks it and eating it, remarks to himself how lovely it tastes. Very best wishes." And then he signs this with the word baffled along with his name. So there are a number of points within this question. We'll just take them one by one. I want to address this one in particular first. He's asking this question because he's saying that my perspective seems to be very different to other speakers of non-duality. And he's gotten the impression that I'm somehow saying there's an objective world that exists outside of my ideas of it. And that even if it is a process, that somehow there is a world that exists outside of our basic awareness of it, and that it extends in space and time, even though it may not have any particular color, sound, taste, and so on. So he's suggesting that what I'm, or he's stating that he's getting the impression that I'm saying there is this some basic reality that's existing outside of our ideas of it and outside of how we're usually aware of it. So I'd like to make it very clear that I'm not saying that. He points out that I use the word nature. And I'd like to point out that I'm using that word in a very specific way. Again, words are vague at times, even if I try to make them very specific. Words often carry a number of meanings, and so with this word nature, I'm using that word basically in the same way I would use the word the universe or the cosmos. And I'm just saying, again, it's always the bottom line, that there is this big event of existence, what we normally call the big event of existence. Now, you could call that the universe because it's just literally the word universe means undivided turning. So somebody else might say there's just one flowing. or there is just the formless, because flowing and formlessness are the same thing. They're simply words that point to this event that has no particular form and ultimately no particular explanation. The word universe is sometimes, or the word nature is sometimes used in the same way that the word universe is used, in this sense of a great unformed event, a great mysterious happening. So the word universe isn't generally used in those terms. The word universe is most often used as a, you know, it's pictured as this situation of a bunch of solar systems and planets in their orbit. But the literal meaning of that word is undivided turning. So somebody else might say one flowing. Now, the word nature can be used in that sense. So that's the sense that I'm using it. And what I'm saying is never suggesting that there's an objective existence that you can identify, and it's not saying that there's an objective existence that you can't identify. Flat out, it's just saying there's a happening, what we would consider to be the happening of now, and there's no possible way of saying anything true about anything. That the mere fact that all of this is without any particular form makes it impossible to say anything about it. And added to that is the fact that any word that we have is a meaningless sound. All it does is point to apparent forms which don't ultimately exist. And I've said this many, many times, probably thousands of times on this website, as well as saying it countless times, or almost countless times, within my writings. But I'm also pointing out that to acknowledge those facts, that words are just meaningless sounds pointing to forms that don't actually exist, no matter how many times we state that the happening of this moment, there can't be anything truly said about this. It's also the fact that we can't outright say it's not happening, because it seems like something's happening. So ultimately, we're left even more baffled than this questioner. With a non-dual perspective, we don't come to anything that we can say about existence. We come to absolute puzzlement. And absolute puzzlement doesn't sit around thinking about consciousness. Absolute puzzlement doesn't sit there thinking that there's something called consciousness. Nor does it sit around thinking that there's some kind of objective reality. In this absolute puzzlement, the focus on thought as some way of, or focusing on thought with the feeling that it can actually say anything at all about existence, that focus is dropped. It's not possible to maintain this belief that thought can truly say anything at all about anything. Now, I don't know what other non-duality teachers are ultimately saying. This person has written in saying that, in general, they're probably presenting the notion that the only thing that exists is consciousness, and that everything is an appearance in consciousness. And I'm simply pointing out that the totally unexplainable happening presents itself before the word consciousness comes along, and that consciousness, within our usual views of existence, if we really examine this word consciousness, it's just a meaningless sound that somehow points to the basic feeling that there's something happening here. Now, the word consciousness doesn't mean anything at all. It's just this sound, and if we lived in a different country, it would be a different sound in a different language. So this word or this sound itself means nothing. It just points to this, what we might call the happening of this moment, the event of this moment, and that it's not possible to say anything at all about that, not even that it's a happening of this moment. People like to say, well, there's just this, but even that is saying too much. If you say there's a this, there must be a that. It's all gibberish. So what I'm presenting is the consideration that any attempt to say anything at all about existence, to say anything true at all about whatever seems to be happening, is impossible. So he goes on to say that he writes as someone who sees that there is only life happening as nowness, with no real past or future apart from the thoughts about them. So here's the difficulty of words. In this statement, he's presenting the notion that there's something called life happening, and it's happening as a nowness with no real past or future. But if there is no past or future, there can't be a nowness. The word nowness would make no sense. So now, is that really what he means? And here's the difficulty of speaking about this so-called happening of now. In order to consider the limitations of our usual views of existence, we end up having to use the usual views of existence. So we talk about a life happening as a nowness, which makes no sense whatsoever. We talk about consciousness, which makes no sense whatsoever. And we may also be left with some very subtle views and subtle questions, such as, if only consciousness is real, this has implications for how we view and feel about death. If consciousness is just an invented word and a non-issue, and life is a magical, baffling event, then maybe death is also an invented word and also a non-issue. So he goes on to consider that if nature is real and extends in time and space, then there is going to be this ongoing process of maybe the personality disappearing and the body aspect carrying on with other processes taking place. If, however, there is only consciousness, then there is also no real birth or death. And he's baffled by these two perspectives on life. There is no way that I can say something that will convince everyone else to look at life in a certain way. All that I ever do on this website or in my writings is to point to the contradictions that exist within the world of thought and our usual views of existence. And I find that if we consider these contradictions to a certain degree, then any attempt at all to say anything about life falls away, because these words and these views ultimately make no sense whatsoever. They don't even make sense in relation to what we usually call our experience. Even the notion that there's something called our experience is suspect. So, all I can really respond with in this consideration is that with everything I've presented on this website and in my writing, I'm simply saying that whatever this is that seems to be happening in this moment, whatever this is that we seem to experience throughout a lifetime, whatever this is, nothing can actually be said about this. Or you cannot describe it as anything in particular with any truth. It becomes very easy to say, well, it doesn't have a form, and these words that we use to describe it ultimately have no real meaning at all. So it seems somewhat possible to simply say it's not this and it's not that. So we come back to the very ancient approach of neti neti, not this, not that. But that's not negating everything, because to ultimately say there is nothing is again to try to make some positive statement about existence, to say what it is exactly. And nothing true can actually be said. There is no particular form to be focused on, ultimately. The forms don't exist because our general experience is that everything is changing. And the words we use to point to these apparent forms have no real meaning. They only take on meaning when they point to an apparent form. So we're left with a conundrum. Puzzlement, absolute bafflement. We can't say what it is, we can't say what it isn't, or that it does not exist, ultimately. We can see that it obviously is not what we usually think it is, but we can't say there's nothing happening here, because even if we say nothing at all, it feels like something's happening here. And yet, even in this moment when it feels like there's something happening here, tonight when we go to sleep, what we call sleep, in the middle of the night in deep sleep, there is no sense of anything happening here. So all of this just leaves us with the impossibility of truly saying anything about anything. And from that sensibility, this notion of birth and death makes no sense whatsoever. And so it is that if someone went to a teacher such as Ramana Maharshi and asked them, what's going to happen after we die? A teacher like Ramana Maharshi would say, first point out to me something that was born, and then I'll tell you what's going to happen at death. Because for a teacher like Ramana Maharshi, there is just this mysterious happening. Now, that's not to say there's a mysterious objective reality existing somewhere outside of notions of awareness. And it's not saying that there is only consciousness. I mean, Ramana would sometimes use the word consciousness in the same way that you would use the word universe, or in the literal sense of the meaning of the word universe. So he would sometimes use the word consciousness, sometimes use the word universe, and sometimes use the word happening. So in this absolute bafflement, not a little bit of confusion around whether or not there's an objective reality or there is only consciousness, that's confusion that exists within the world of thought. That's still the primary focus on the world of thought. If we come to absolute bafflement, then there's just whatever this is playing out in whatever way it plays out. And some of it seems to hurt. In some of it, it really seems painful. But that's just the way it is. And so, with that absolute bafflement, when we're chased over a cliff by a tiger, and the tiger, and we're hanging on for dear life to a vine, and the tiger is slowly chewing away at the vine, which is simply the fact that in this great baffling happening, some of it is very painful. What other option do we have than to acknowledge that some of it is very painful, but there also may be a strawberry sitting there within reach? And so we pick the strawberry and we taste it, and we realize how sweet that tastes. Because in this big baffling event of whatever this is, and to even say that this is to say too much about it, there is what we would, it doesn't matter how supposedly awakened we are, even this story of awakening is just still a fantasy. No matter how awakened we will become, it will still seem as though there are expressions of existence that are extremely painful, and there are expressions of existence that are extremely pleasant. There is this dance of ever-shifting appearances. Within our usual view of existence, and even though we see through the mirage of that view, the mirage still presents itself. So often people have the notion that if you come to awakening, the mirage of form will disappear. All the rest of the storylines will disappear, and it's not the case. The apparent storylines will still present themselves, but even that is a totally unexplainable happening. It's not a physical reality, it's not consciousness, it's not this, it's not that. But it still seems to be what we call thought, even though thought is just a meaningless sound that it seems we were taught to bark, like a barking seal or a barking dog, just bark on command. Even though we see through the contradictions of all of those notions, or even though we acknowledge the contradictions of all of those notions and see through the mirage, the obvious mirage of forms and labels, they still seem to present themselves. Whatever this is, the storylines come along, and the storylines are ultimately a totally mysterious happening. They're not even something called storylines, but they still seem to present themselves. And within that storyline, we have stories of situations that are extremely painful and stories of situations that seem to be extremely pleasant. Perhaps the last thing that I might offer in this is, I remember a teaching that was once offered by Da Free John. And in that teaching, he said, at some point, we will all have to be warriors. Doesn't matter, men or women, we will have to be warriors in living life. In simply facing up to the apparent difficulties of life. And he said, in the apparent history of humankind, there was a time when we all had to be grown-ups by the time we were 15 years old. I mean, this country of North America, in a lot of cases, was settled by 15-year-old couples moving across the West in a wagon train, having to face all of these incredible hardships at a very young age. And Da Free John pointed out that it seems at this point in time, we can remain adolescent idiots until we're into our 60s. And that actually, the demand of a spiritual awakening is that we become warriors. Now, all of that's very poetic, and it's not the way that I would that I would present this. But again, it's pointing to this consideration that it doesn't really matter how awakened you are. There are a lot of situations in life that are still going to seem very, very painful, very, very difficult. And even in the midst of all of that, there are certain aspects of it that will seem to have an incredible sweetness. And so within the acknowledgement that nothing can truly be said about any of this, we're still going to apparently have to live through these difficulties and these pleasures. It's just the fact. Okay, that's all that's coming up in response to this person's writing, so we'll move on to the next. Another person has written in saying, "Hi Daryl, it just occurred to me that if my story is a fantasy, then who is there to have an awakening? The most powerful element I know is this story. It's not optional, or doesn't even seem of the slightest importance whether I take the stance of believing it or not. It's a force, a deadbeat drama in which there is no me other than the character of me. What I took to heart most from all of the non-dual inquiry is that decidedly the sense of me is based on constantly remembering the narrative of me, poor me, only me, why me? It seems true to me that that alone is my sense of individual identity. There is no choice about this narrative. It's like a strongly flowing torrent, physical, emotional. There was the idea that awakening or enlightenment would be a liberation from this. If it occurs to you that this oh-so-compelling drama is invented on a minute-by-minute basis, and that the idea of liberation from it is just more of itself, then liberation is fictional. So, no liberation. So just this. Not liberation, more like mortification." Following that along, the sense of helplessness at being without a real hope of a shining beacon, the feeling of being simply without true substance, adrift with this uncontrollable mind and body in this uncontrollable world, is simply more of itself, the me. You suggest, however, that there is something called awakening, although you also say that awakening happens to no one. What advice would you give to a slaughterhouse? Regards." Um, Yeah, this is an interesting question. I don't really suggest there's something called awakening. I most often say there's a so-called awakening. I'm saying that from my apparent perspective, and it's just an apparent perspective, I don't say that even that's a reality, that there's no way to say anything truly about what's occurring in this moment. The whole notion of a person going through a lifetime, that's a fantasy. All of these descriptions of pain and pleasure, that's a fantasy. But it doesn't mean that what we call pain doesn't exist. It's just saying that these labels and these storylines can't truly say anything at all about what's happening here, but it's not saying that the happening doesn't exist. It's saying the happening is just going to be whatever it is. I also point out that even this apparent perspective isn't for everyone. I point out that it's not the one true way of viewing existence. I also point out that it's really not offering you anything because it's simply saying that there's no way of saying what any of this is, that the whole notion that someone's in charge of it is false, that everything we apparently are is simply the dance of this larger event. And I'm not even saying that having this perspective feels necessarily pleasant. When I present this, I don't even know why I present this. I don't even know what this is. I can't even say this is a me presenting this perspective. This is just the compelled expression of existence. So as this person who apparently has written in, points out that even the storyline is not optional. And ultimately, it doesn't seem to be of slightest importance whether I take the stance of believing it or not, that it's flat out a force. It's the forceful expression of whatever this is. It's a portion of that expression. So there's no option in having a storyline. And I would say yes, that's a fact. There's no option to having a storyline. All I ever really am expressing in this is that fundamentally it's a totally mysterious happening just doing whatever it does. Within my own particular apparent storyline, there is this sense that the storylines are false. So with that sense, there isn't any real focus on the storyline as being some ultimate reality that we have to be concerned about. The storyline itself is just a totally mysterious event, moving and shifting in whatever way it does. I'm not saying that having that storyline is going to make everything feel good. Within my apparent storyline, it's also the case that there are other people that are compelled to have this perspective, and it's only for them that this is offered. This apparent non-dual perspective is apparently being offered here simply as an apparent support to those who are apparently compelled to also have this apparent perspective. And for those apparent people, this is very important. They don't have to decide whether it's important or not. They don't have to debate whether it's important or not. You either relate to it or you don't relate to it. There isn't any option to that either. And even if you do relate to it, having this perspective is not going to make everything feel warm and fuzzy and glowing. there's just going to be a totally mysterious event playing out in whatever way it plays out. And the storylines, the apparent storylines, which are also just a totally mysterious event playing out in whatever way they play out, within those storylines, there are still going to be something called extreme pain and extreme pleasure, fear, anxiety, confusion. All of that apparent storyline will still be presenting itself. However, for those who apparently are compelled to have this perspective, somehow in acknowledging this perspective, there seems also within the storyline to be a lessening of certain concerns regarding this great mysterious event of existence. Now, I'm not even going to say there are specific things that are going to happen. It's just within this great mysterious event, which seems to be presenting a so-called awakening, that with this so-called awakening, there is a lessening of certain concerns, but I can't say what specific concerns. I can't say to what degree they're going to lessen, because it's also the case that within this apparent world and within this apparent storyline, one of the most fundamental things we acknowledge is that each and every apparent expression is absolutely unique. Even if it is quite similar to another apparent expression, it is ultimately unique. So even within these storylines of apparent awakenings, there isn't any specific awakening that can be described. There is a general notion of awakening. You know, there can be a general acknowledgement that the storylines aren't the truth. There can be a general acknowledgement that there's no one in charge of this, that there is no one existing apart from this mysterious expression of existence. There can be a general acknowledgement that it never arrives anywhere. There can be a general acknowledgement that there is absolutely no explanation of this whatsoever. But as to how that specifically plays out in this apparent world of form, nothing can be said about that. Each and every apparent awakening is unique. And ultimately, the story of a so-called awakening is totally false. There's no way of saying anything at all about what this is that's happening. But in the same breath, we can't say outright that it's not happening, because even if all the thoughts fall away, it feels like something's happening here. So, what advice would I give to the slaughterhouse? So this person who's written in is saying that, you know, there is this event, that we don't have any option to it, and that even the story of liberation is fictional. So what advice would I give to this situation? I don't give any advice. I never give anybody any advice. I present my apparent perspective. And in my apparent life, I've been told by literally hundreds and hundreds of people who were also compelled to have a similar perspective that it has felt supportive to them to have me express this perspective. But I don't tell anybody to have this perspective. I don't say that this perspective is offering anything to anybody. I simply present the perspective I don't even say this is a me presenting the perspective. I don't know what this is. All of it is just happening the way it happens. There's no way of saying anything truly about it. It's just playing out the way it plays out. And in this apparently mysterious happening, there are apparent people that have an apparently similar perspective to my apparent perspective. And they say that it has been tremendously helpful for me to simply present the perspective. Even if I don't ask anybody else to have the perspective, even if I state outright there's nothing being offered here, they tell me that it's helpful. Now, in almost every one of these responses for the last couple of years, I've stated that this is not the one true expression of existence. It's not the one true way of considering existence. It's just one of the mysterious happenings of existence. Either you relate to it or you don't relate to it. If you do relate to it, that's great. If you don't relate to it, that's also great. Now, within this apparent world, there are lots of people offering advice to lots of other apparent people. And so if it's advice you're looking for, you should probably go somewhere else. Because I'm not advising anybody to do anything other than be whatever they are and pursue whatever apparent interests they have. So if you have an interest in searching for advice, I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. I'm not going to tell you what perspective to have. I'm simply presenting one apparent perspective on existence. I'm not even asking you to have that perspective. I'm just saying, within the world of stories, this is my apparent perspective. If you relate to it, great. If you don't relate to it, great. The issues that are involved within this apparent perspective are important to me, and they seem to be important to other apparent people, but they don't have to be important to everyone. And more than that, I'm saying that I have no sense of what any of this actually is. It's not even a me presenting an apparent perspective. It's just the compulsive dance of whatever this is. So that's all that's arising in relation to this apparent question. So we'll move on to the next. Okay, a third person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Thank you for part two of last month's talk. It was a killer. I really enjoyed your story about your job at the warehouse, where you sometimes end up in a situation where you say something apparently not so nice to your coworkers, and that you regret it later on. So this implies that there is a feeling of guilt or shame arising. Am I right? I'm asking this because somewhere in your books you said that after realizing the true nature of existence, emotions like guilt, shame, and pride fade away. Maybe you could tell a little more about this so I don't get any wrong ideas going on in my head. Isn't there ever a feeling of pride arising in you when someone is saying things like, 'Your teachings had a huge impact on my life'? I assume that you will answer that you're not teaching anything. When you answer, 'I'm not doing it,' what is the I in that sentence? You're not saying there is no I that is doing or not doing anything. You're saying that I'm not doing anything. There is a subtle difference there, or is there? Thank you, Daryl. Your teaching had really a huge impact on my life, and I really mean that. Best wishes." All right. Actually, I just want to point out that In my books, and I think it was in Essence Revisited, I make the statement that after realizing the true nature of existence, emotions like guilt, shame, and pride fade away. So just to be very specific, I don't say that after realizing the true nature of existence, I'm simply saying that if you relate to this perspective that I'm offering, I'm not saying that's the true nature of existence. I'm simply saying that if you relate to this perspective that I'm offering, there is the sense that life is simply this great mysterious event playing out in whatever way it plays out, and that ultimately there is no person doing that, because everything that we call a person is simply an expression of this great mysterious event. Then in relating to that perspective, emotions like guilt, shame, and pride fade away to varying degrees. I'm not saying they will disappear totally. In some apparent individuals, it may seem as though they disappear totally. In others, they may lessen to a certain degree and not disappear totally. And this person is asking that in this situation in the warehouse where I might get angry and say some things that are not so nice to my coworkers, I made the statement that I, even when it's happening, I feel badly that it's happening, and I know that I'm going to, I can't remember if I used the word regret, but let's say I used the word regret, that I'm going to regret it later. And no, it's not necessarily a feeling of guilt or shame. It's more the fact that it doesn't feel good. And there's the feeling that that unpleasant quality of it is going to continue for some time, because I'm going to have to live with the responses of my coworkers for a few days before the whole thing dies down, and all of that is going to be very unpleasant. So I feel badly that it's happening in the first place, because it's basically unpleasant. I don't like it, but it's happening. And in the near future, it's going to continue to have this unpleasant quality. And so the sense of that feels unpleasant. So it's not that I feel responsible for doing it, but I'm just regretting that it's happening in the first place, because it's just feels unpleasant. And no matter how apparently awakened I get, there are times that seem, that feel incredibly unpleasant. And there are apparent actions that feel incredibly unpleasant. And that's just the fact. You know, it's like the great Zen master saying at the end of his life, "I don't want to die." And all the students are kind of, "Well, how can you say that? Like, you're a Zen master. Like, aren't you beyond feelings of feeling badly about something?" And the Zen master is trying to point out, no, everything just happens the way it happens. And the fact of the matter is, I don't want to die. It could be anything. I'm afraid of dying. It could be, I do feel guilty. Even though I see that I'm not doing this, I still feel guilty. It can be anything at all with this awakening, because the acknowledgement is, with this so-called awakening, even the awakening is a fantasy, that story is a fantasy, it's just a totally mysterious event playing out in whatever way it plays out. And even to acknowledge that doesn't turn you into some happening that is, that matches some abstract notion of perfection. It doesn't offer you some golden glowing goal that you can move towards in the future. It doesn't offer you some fixed and static way of perceiving existence and experiencing existence, a fixed and static golden glowing event, it goes on being this totally mysterious dance of apparent ups and downs, joys and sorrows, pains and pleasures, confusions and clarities. There's just no way of saying what it is, and there's just no way of taking responsibility for it, or no way of feeling that we're making it happen. I probably should avoid the word responsibility, because then everybody's going to write in saying, well, how can you be irresponsible? It's not about responsibility and irresponsibility either. It's just, you know, if you have a sense of responsibility, you didn't create that. If you have a sense of love, you didn't create that. If you have a sense of guilt, you didn't create that. If you have a sense of despair, you didn't create that. All of it is a totally mysterious event, presenting itself in whatever way it presents itself. And there's no way of truly saying anything at all about that. So, this person asks outright, isn't there ever a feeling of pride arising in you when someone is saying things like, your teaching had huge impact on my life? And this person says, they assume that I will answer that I'm not teaching anything. But no, for whatever, you know, I don't know why, there isn't any particular pride in what I'm saying, or any particular pride in someone saying to me that, wow, you know, your teaching had this huge impact on my life. I mean, there's a feeling of pleasure in that, and there's a feeling of happiness around that within my particular storyline, within my own particular fantasy. There's an urge to be supportive to my community around me. And so, yeah, there's a great pleasure within that storyline, that it feels as though I am being a supportive element within my community. But there isn't a sense of pride in that, oh, wow, look what I've done, and I'm so good, and I'm so great. There isn't any sense of that, because for some reason, in relation to this, you know, whatever it is that I seem to be presenting, it's quite obvious that this is fundamentally an unexplainable happening, and that I'm definitely not doing it. In the same way that, you know, when Einstein was congratulated on his theory of relativity, he would just say the simple truth that I didn't make this happen, it just happened. So I don't make my expression happen, it just happens. Now, it may be that some apparent person who has this perspective does feel pride in what they're expressing, and yet somehow when they really consider it, they have to acknowledge that it's not their doing. You know, it may be somehow that life still expresses a certain sense of pride in what they're saying. I mean, as far as I know, since each and every apparent expression of existence is unique, the range is huge, and it seems as though whatever this is, it can present itself in any number of ways, in an infinite number of ways. So it may be the case that it could present someone who has this feeling that they're not ultimately doing their life, and yet it may still have feelings of pride to some degree. And that's why I did not say that these things would fade out totally. I said they lessen to varying degrees. Now, the same person is also wondering what I'm saying when I say something like, I'm not doing it. And they're wondering what the word I in that sentence actually means. So, to me, the word I is just a pointer. If you say the words out there, then you apparently point away from your body. When you say the word I, you apparently point back towards the body. But in both cases, it's a totally unformed, unexplainable happening. There's no way of truly saying anything at all about what this apparent happening of the moment is, but we also can't say it's not happening. So there is this apparent happening. We can't say it's absolutely not happening, because even if we don't say anything at all, it still feels, even if we don't think anything at all, it still basically feels like something is happening. It doesn't seem to need a movement of the intellect for it to make itself obvious. And I don't even know what that means, that it's making itself obvious. So, in my apparent case, when I use the word I, it's just a reference to this totally mysterious happening. You know, pointing back towards this apparent body, all it points back to is a happening that has no explanation whatsoever. I can't even say it's a happening. I can't truly say that it's a happening. So to say there is just a totally unformed, unexplainable happening is also already saying too much. So the word I is just a reference, a pointing to the apparent happening of this moment, the apparent unformed, unexplainable event. And it's not to focus on the explanation of that, it's just pointing to the happening itself. Now, in using the word I in that way, there's no particular thing that it's pointing to that is doing anything or not doing anything. It's just always pointing to a totally mysterious happening. It's always making reference to the totally unexplainable eventing of this apparent moment. And it's also always making reference to the fact that nothing can actually be said about this. Nothing true can actually be said about this. So it's not the matter that when I say I'm not doing it, there is no subtle difference between saying that and saying there is no I that is doing or not doing anything. Ultimately, it's just saying there's no true explanation for anything that's happening here at all, but I'm also not making some declaration that there's nothing happening at all, because that would be just as ridiculous as trying to describe something that's happening here. In fact, it is still trying to describe something that's happening here by saying there's nothing happening here. All of these explanations, they're just filled with contradiction and conflict, and those contradictions and conflicts point out that they're an absolute fantasy. And in absolute fantasy, there's not even the consideration that there is a doing or a not doing. Because that's fantasy too. And so once again, this non-dual perspective is leaving us in absolute puzzlement. And absolute puzzlement is simply not being able to say anything true about anything at all. But even that realization, that apparent realization, doesn't leave us without apparent storylines. Those apparent storylines continue to come and go. An unexplainable happening playing out in whatever way it plays out. But even those apparent storylines are an unexplainable happening playing out in whatever way they play out. And again, this perspective is only meaningful to those apparent people that are compelled to have this apparent perspective. This is not the one true way of looking at existence. This is not the one and only apparent expression of existence. If you relate to it, that's great. If you don't relate to it, that's great. If you relate to it, if you're compelled to have a similar apparent perspective, it will be incredibly meaningful. If you're not compelled to have this apparent perspective, it won't be. It won't have a sense of meaning to you. But it doesn't matter. Within this vast range of apparent expression of existence, there will be something that has meaning to you. And you will be expressed in whatever way you're apparently expressed. So that's all that's coming up in response to this person's writing, and we'll move on. Another person has written in saying, "Dear Daryl, I was wondering if you had anything to say about the void and why you never mention it, as far as I know. It seems to me that the kind of deconstruction you talk about still leaves some sense of baseline objective reality, only stripped of the conceptual overlay of falsely absolutized boundaries and categories, etc. Isn't the whole point of the dream analogy that what we perceive as actual reality actually has no independent existence or substance at all, i.e., that all we know or think we know is merely our limited sphere of perception, duality, as it manifests out of the underlying mystery, so to speak? If all you talk about is the shifting, dancing, eventing that constitutes our perception, which we still assume to be reality in itself, but to which the totality of the timeless can never be confined, then isn't that essentially failing to dismantle the dreamscape of duality all the way? Thank you." Okay. When I point out that everyone's common experience is that life is this moving, shifting, dancing event, that everything we call a thing is changing, this is simply to point out one of the limitations of the world of thought. Now, along with that, I point out that the labels that we cling to so strongly are simply meaningless sounds that merely point to apparent forms. And in that pointing, those meaningless labels seem to take on some meaning. But the fact of the matter is, there is no absolute form there to focus on. And so these sounds that point to this unformed happening have no real meaning. There's nothing there to describe. There's nothing there to label specifically. Now, in that, I'm not saying that there is some kind of objective reality that remains, because once again, that's some absolutized notion of existence. That's clinging to some weird label about existence, an objective reality. I'm saying that words like subjective and objective are totally meaningless. And, you know, in this person's question, he's wanting to know why I don't say anything about the void. Well, what void? All anyone ever experiences is, or in our general storylines, all anyone ever experiences is what we might call the mysterious happening of this moment. But I point out that even to call it the mysterious happening of this moment is really to say too much. Now, there are certain traditional scriptures that will talk about that which is void. It's not saying there is a void. They're saying, they're referencing that which is void, that which is empty. It is empty of form. It is empty of explanation. It is empty of arriving anywhere. It is empty of anyone doing anything. It is that which is empty. But that's not saying there is a void that's existing somewhere outside of our usual perceptions. It's saying that what we experience right now, what we usually say has form, what we usually say has an explanation, what we usually hope to arrive somewhere, what we usually say we are doing, that this apparent experience is void, it is empty of all of what we usually assume it has. So I don't talk about the void, because some weird notion of the void is a total fantasy, in the same way that ideas of form are a fantasy, ideas of doership are a fantasy, ideas of non-doership are a fantasy, ideas of arriving somewhere are a fantasy, ideas of explanation are a fantasy. So you might say that I'm using it, if I use the word void, it would be used in this ancient way of using it, as pointing to emptiness. And in Buddhism, they refer to it as sunyata, emptiness. That what we assume to be a self and a world and a world of doing is empty, is actually empty of those things. It's empty of form. It's empty of doership. That these notions are fantasy. But let's be very clear about this, that if you then say nothing is happening here, you're still in the storyline. If you're focusing on that storyline, you're still focusing on the world of something. Because the word nothing can only have meaning in relationship to something. And that's the reason that within a non-dual perspective, in the very ancient ways of expressing this, they never refer to it as oneness. They refer to it as not two. It's not one, it's not two. It's not something, it's not nothing. It's not duality, and it's not non-duality. It's not this, and it's not that. They're not trying to point to some thing that you can call a void. They're pointing out that you can't say anything about anything. You can't truly say anything about anything. But that's not going to leave you with the feeling that absolutely nothing is happening here. Because even if no thought arises at all, what we call thought, even if all the apparent thoughts fall away, it still basically feels like something is happening here. And yet we can't say that something is actually happening, because tonight, in the middle of the night, in what we call deep sleep, it won't even feel like there's anything happening here. So even the feeling that there is something happening or not happening isn't a dependable feeling. Whatever this is, whatever seems to be happening here, there's no way of truly saying anything at all about it. So, no, I don't talk about a void. I don't ultimately focus on any thought at all. Any reference I make to our usual storylines is simply pointing out the limitation of those storylines. I'm not trying to leave anybody with a focus on a storyline. I'm simply pointing out that even if there is no focus on a storyline, everything goes on apparently happening, even the apparent storylines. And there's no way of saying anything at all about what this apparently is. Okay, so this has been going on already for about an hour and 15 minutes. So we'll divide this response up into a couple of parts. So we'll end this particular section, and when you're ready to go on, you can click on part 2.